Hello, and thank you for joining the Connection Therapy Podcast. This is a podcast about the craft of psychotherapy, and we seek to support those who strive to improve their craft by sharing research about the science and stories about the art of psychology. Together, we will explore these findings so you can decide how you want to apply them to benefit your practice. Well, it's mid-August, and many people are headed back to school. Even if your world is not affected by this event, it is uncanny how much of the world tends to pace with the academic calendar. This has implications for the practice of psychology, because most of us, if we support children and their families, are highly likely to receive additional referrals, as in requests for service, in approximately 6 weeks. I've learned over the years of having a private practice that this is about the time most schools do progress reports or other conferences to assess progress. And what I've learned is in these conferences, if mental health concerns are identified, then people tend to reach out for support at that time. In recent episodes, I've been discussing how play supports learning. As in function of play, especially for young mammals of any species, play is a sort of practice for maturation, and in humans, adulthood. So how then would we hope to encourage play, since play encourages learning? Well, I went back to Jak Panksepp. He's the founder of Affective Neuroscience, which essentially looks at the ways humans are related to animals, specifically mammals. And there was something that really stood out to me, and that is that he talks about how young members of any species, at least any mammal species, are highly likely to become playful once they're around each other. And yet, there are some studies that suggest it takes a little bit for that to occur. He's discussing about what happens to us as social creatures when we're in isolation. And sadly, extreme forms of isolation are really difficult for any member of a mammal species, namely humans. The introverts among us are maybe considering there's outstanding debate on that. But it's true that we need to be around other humans, especially when we're young. It helps the regulation of our nervous systems. For humans, the fully independent capacity for nervous system regulation typically comes on around age 5, which is right around the time people end up going to school, at least in the United States. And sometimes earlier, of course, in playgroups and preschool and things. So we need the interaction of others. And yet, due to the break between academic years, maybe haven't been around others as much. And Panksepp describes that for monkeys and other mammals and other primates that have been studied, there's kind of a reacquaintance time when they're brought back into a social group. And what's counterintuitive is that at first, they're disinclined to play when they first come back together. And they sort of just huddle together and initially just seem uninterested in play. And the thinking here seems to be that they need social support before they can have the courage to begin playing. And to me, this relates to the idea that I was discussing in the last couple of episodes, that play is not really possible unless one feels safe and our basic needs are met. So at this time of significant transition, we can perhaps do two things. Well, maybe three. The first would be see what we can do to have our basic needs met. Enough sleep, enough food, things that tend to creep up on us at this time of transition become really important. The second thing would be to remember that it's normal for play to take a while to develop. As groups of humans that are going to be put back together, at least for those who are school age at this time. But ironically, again, I just find that most things run on an academic calendar. So people have been out of the office or other things. And now in the fall, it seems many kind of activities sort of start up again for any age, but particularly school age children. So in other words, having the expectation that when we all come back together, or maybe meet for the first time, it's normal for us to need social support before we feel like engaging in play activities. And as a reminder, for adults, our play activities tend to be a little more verbal and maybe, you know, organized sports or something like that. But nevertheless, play in some form, even just joking around with each other on social media, is evident at all ages. And in order to get to that point, we need to have a sense of social support before we do that. So to me, I think it's important for us to recognize and remember this and not feel like anything's wrong if the new people in our classroom or the new people in our office don't seem to be getting along right away in the next couple weeks. And the third thing is that in terms of feeling the safety and social supports, in about 6 weeks, if those, or at any time, of course, if those things are not developing as one might hope, then mental health therapy can be helpful in order to encourage social skills. And as I've mentioned in previous episodes, but I would like to reinforce here, some ways to do that are to introduce reciprocal play activities or interactive activities that include reciprocal, in other words, turn-taking and other kind of modulated back-and-forth movements or discussion or behaviors. Those kind of reciprocal activities where patients are reinforced in terms of safety, but also in terms of feedback on their social engagement and activities during session, those tend to be really helpful for anyone struggling to return to the classroom or the office. One special thing I would like to highlight here is that there is one kind of unique condition that as mental health therapists we need to be looking for, but also might be important for our colleagues in other disciplines to be aware of. And that is that sexual abuse, unfortunately, disrupts many things, of course, but it disrupts the social engagement systems. And it impacts and impedes our ability to make safe and nurturing friendships. And this is particularly important for the ages when many children report being abused, because it's right about, usually it's often at least, kind of prepubescent and puberty years where someone might be experiencing sexual abuse. And that tends to be the time when we need our peers and friendships the most. And so it can be a really unfortunate consequence, among the many others, of the experience of sexual abuse, that trusting in friendships and other caring individuals, especially peers, can become really difficult. It's one of the tragic outcomes of abuse that as mental health therapists, we really need to be watching for and listening for in our sessions. At least that's one thing I focus on when I meet a new patient at this time of the year, and particularly when they're referred for social concerns, because the instinct to want to make social relationships and maybe have play interactions and play behaviors with other peers gets kind of thrown awry by the experience of abuse, and it makes it really hard to come back into relationship with other humans. And so there's a tendency to isolate, and from that tendency to isolate, it's sort of reinforced that independence is best, except that as one progresses toward sexual maturity, then there becomes this sort of thing that Stephen Porges has mentioned for people who are in this condition and have experienced that, in that the trustworthy peers and even well-meaning adults at that point are considered threats, and the people who are threatening, their potential threat is under-assessed. And so it's a sort of counterintuitive thing where as well-meaning adults who are trying to intervene, we might notice that a child is struggling socially, and we might kind of get on them about, you know, so-and-so would be a great friend for you. How come you're not playing or hanging out with them? And it's because there's this really unfortunate consequence, like I say, among many unfortunate outcomes from sexual abuse. But there's one that's very counterintuitive, and that is the peers who would be safe and appropriate friends and other social outlets, the instinct toward them gets thwarted by the experience of abuse and tends to make someone in that condition seek peers who have more risky behaviors and who are more prone to be alarming to the person. And the ones who would be, you know, maybe good friends or trustworthy friends are the ones they are less inclined to reach out toward. So in summary, I'd like to highlight a few things that are important for the practice of mental health therapy at this time of the year. The first is, it's uncanny, but even if your clients are not directly affected by the academic calendar, it's very normal for this to be an extreme time of transition and pressure. The second thing is, play encourages learning, and in order to be able to play at any age, one needs to feel safe and socially supported. The next thing is, it's normal when groups of humans come back together, either in the classroom or the office, for there to be a kind of awkward time where no one wants to play, even though we are social creatures as humans and we're sort of drawn to that. We need to feel social comfort before we're interested in engaging in play. And so it's normal that the first few weeks, maybe even a month, of coming back together in large groups is awkward and uncomfortable. That's very common and to be expected given our physical and physiological characteristics as mammals. And the last thing is, a special condition that as mental health therapists to be considering when and if we do receive referrals for support, especially when it has to do with social skills and the ability to make social relationships. For myself, I am keenly interested when I meet someone who seems to have difficulty making friendships with peers who might seem like they would be quality relationships in terms of trustworthiness and reliability and even safety, and instead is reaching toward peers who have high risk in general and especially high risk for my client. When I see that sort of counterintuitive selection happening, that's sort of thematic and especially when it's all of the sudden sort of changes, then I'm curious and questioning in the back of my mind if there might be an experience or a history of sexual abuse that needs to also be addressed in mental health therapy. I hope you'll join us again for future explorations in the field of psychology. And if you'd like to take a step further, there are additional ways to obtain more education and support on our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com. While there, you will find information about the authors and studies featured in the podcast episodes. Also, you will see a schedule of live trainings I offer on the topics featured in the podcast. And you will find information about the Connection Community, a growing group of mental health clinicians dedicated to the study and practice of psychotherapy. Please check out our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com, to learn more. Thanks. Until next time.